From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad with me, Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the Tatry Mountains, with my teeth still not working, Lee Banks over in India, and Mark Gander in Paris. Truly international programme. So where are we? Well, if you missed the first part, where the hell were you? For goodness sake.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been sweating bits all over the place just for you and you're late.
Good. May I ask the ladies and gentlemen a question?
No, because I'm just about to remind them that if ever you miss parts of the programme, you can always go to the catch-up service as well on Audioboo, where you can hear this programme and many before it as well, if you want to have a little postcard from Poprad weekend barbecue in Australia because it's summertime, or something equally as daft. Yes, what do you want to remind
us? May I repeat that in Indian for our Indian listeners?
You're right.
Kaya Ahapo Meri Madnada Karangishi.
Yes, that sounded more like a language from Star Trek.
I didn't say my accent was
very
good.
How come you've learned that much language in this short space of
time? He's got it written down.
I haven't got it written down. I've been taking lessons at the Taj Mahal.
Yeah, right. Talking of...
downstairs with the old man on the toilet paper.
Yeah, exactly. A dying taxi driver donates his body for mummification.
I think he should just get stuffed, frankly.
Yeah. He's done it. He's made a joke.
My God. Go on, Lee.
I would like to pose the question, because we're all being very polite with each other and we're not having rants and stuff like that. We're just asking each other the question. I would ask, is this the sickest research that's ever been carried out? I think the taxi man is doing something which he may see as a good thing, and he's got every right to do it. But what is the point of the research? There's no medical grounds for it. Even Frankenstein had a medical reason for carrying out his research into bringing back bodies from the dead. Cryogenics does it. These aren't anything to do with this. This is mummifying a human being for 3,000 years, and nothing will happen.
You said we weren't ranting. Now you are ranting.
That wasn't a rant, that was a question.
This is a piece of valid archaeological research. I mean, it's obviously extremely interesting to confirm the techniques that were used 3,000 years ago. The only trouble, of course, is that you're going to have to wait 3,000 years for the results.
So, why don't they mummify a pig instead of a human being? A pig's body is exactly the same as a human being's over the age of 40, right?
Well, actually, I just thought of something. Do you know I should dedicate and donate my body to medical science?
Why?
Yeah, we'll do it now.
Well, if you think...
Come and get him, he's ready.
Well, if you think about it, I'm quite proud of the fact I'm now 57. I had my first heart
attack. Round the waist.
I had my first heart attack when I was 23. I had a bag around my heart break last year. I've broken both arms, one leg, ribs, collarbone. I'm asthmatic.
And this is only in the last week, ladies and gentlemen.
And I've got high blood pressure. And I've had so many operations. I've had my appendix taken out because it ruptured and I nearly died. So I think my body's absolutely a miracle.
Your body's a temple.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yours is a Taj Mahal, Lee. This is a very interesting experiment, I have to say.
I broke my finger. That's all I've ever done. I had a physio in a place we can't talk about. That's how we're live. Yeah.
They're meant to be dreadfully painful.
Oh, yeah.
Blinking heck, man, I tell you what, you don't want to be in India with one of those. Would you have your body mummified, Eric? And it doesn't mean that some lady's going to come up and stroke you.
No, not at all. Couldn't see the point of that. I think it's about as stupid as that idiot that puts sharks in formaldehyde as well.
Going back to the taxi driver, I don't think the taxi driver himself is doing anything wrong. If he wants to have his body preserved for all in perpetuity, that's fine. But it's the research. Dr. Stephen Buckley, a chemist and research fellow at York University, who spent 19 years trying to uncover the preservation techniques used by the Egyptians during the 18th dynasty, has now advertised for a human body to do it on. Oh, I think there's something a bit weird and maybe even a bit about that.
Must remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that this week we have Lee in India, so he's... connection's not terribly good, and unfortunately Mark's had a bit of a computer issue, so he's talking on a little laptop into the microphone at the top, so apologies for any lower than normal quality of audio. I'll attempt to be very butch for everybody. Moving over to Poland now.
Oh, this is terrible, isn't it?
No.
Yeah. Isn't it?
No.
Oh, all right then.
I think they're taking the game seriously. You tell the story.
I think it's absolutely shameful that this bloke that... Scrabble. You're supposed to... Scrabble people are little weird people who are all thin and all like that and dressing weird clothes and jumpers. But they're still the same sort of person who's up to dirty tricks. And the Polish World Scrabble Championships were marred, as far as I'm concerned, this week when England's Ed Martin was accused of hiding the letter G. During a game, so somebody can complete a word. That is terrible. And does this bloke, his opponent, doesn't sound like an Indian to me, does he? Cholapat Ithi Ari made the accusation after the letter went missing during the game. So he said, no, he was from Thailand, actually. I apologise to India.
Good.
Yeah, well, we found out, didn't we? We found out that Mr. Martin hadn't nicked the G, had he?
It was
a complete falsehood.
So where was the G? In his G spot?
We knew the G spot joke was going to come out, so we bolted, avoided it because we're grown up.
That's 2-0 to Mark this week, blimey.
You can't grass the G spot, it's in my headline. The G spot's in my headline, he even nicked it off me.
No,
I wouldn't use it.
It's not you. My word wants it to do over the G, man. See,
my headline says, well, that didn't hit the G spot.
I know, but it was sent by...
Oh, maybe I haven't got that one.
But Mark's quite right. It was sent by Gmail anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Anyway, yeah.
All right,
anyway, the championship was won by Andrew Fisher from Australia, who actually sat there with dignity and aplomb and didn't give a stuff about a missing G and went on and won it. Cheating little Thai man.
$20,000
he won. His winning word was... It was wildebeest, also known as gnu, but he just spelt it gnu.
so he made up a new word.
Oh dear, oh pray.
Spike, laugh at his jokes then.
No. Sweaty vigilant banned from wearing Batman suits. What on earth?
Quite proper as well.
I think this is a very, very important story. Because there you got a Michigan man who tried to become like a real-life Batman, and he'd like swoop on people who were carrying out crimes and stuff like that. And anyway, eventually he got arrested because he got a canister of chemical irritant spray and lead-lined gloves. What was he going to do with these lead-lined gloves? He would beat him to death with it. And he carried a baton as well. Yeah, carried a baton. So he's arrested. And he's had to plead guilty to all these things. And so the judge has decided now he's banned him for 6 months, right? He's forbidden him for 6 months to put his Batman outfit back on.
He can't start wearing his Batman. Instead, I suppose, or something.
Yeah. But the beauty of it is, right, they had a photograph of him outside the court actually wearing his Batman suit, and he put his arms up in the air, and he got the most immense sweat stains under his arms you've ever seen. So not only has he been proved to be a bit of a thug and a bit of a knob for dressing as Batman, that he's sweaty as well.
Interesting. Another phone company's in trouble. This time it's Nokia. Well, they've actually been in trouble for quite some time now, really, losing market share. But this particular time, we're into net loss of €151 million.
Nokia's finished. Nokia's finished in this form. I mean, they're going to have to rethink Nokia. Yeah, no knocking Nokia. Well, I mean, there won't be any Nokia to knock, knock, knock.
Well, no, I'll tell you, I'm so fed up with my Sony Ericsson that I had to reload the ruddy software on it to stop it keep turning itself off all week. Yeah. Ruddy thing.
Well, I, I, I think Nokia's brilliant. My little Nokia phone. Like I've told the ladies and gentlemen before, I've dropped it in the fire, I've dropped it in the bath, I've dropped it down the toilet. I once flung it 30 foot in the air when I stood on a nail. It crashed onto the builder's van, fell on the floor in bits.
Yeah, but that's an old Nokia. Up. That's the old days Nokia before they started to try and get smart. Nokia just can't do smart.
How long have you...
Why do you try and embarrass me in front of the ladies and gentlemen saying I've got an old Nokia?
Not everybody wants a smartphone.
No, you're dead right.
It's very smart.
But Nokia ought to stick at what they were doing then, but they're trying to go smart, and it just doesn't work. They've tried using their own operating system. You know, they won't join the club. Well, I mean, that's fair enough, but my understanding of Nokia is it's sort of run by sort of pretty well sort of Finnish dynasty that meet in saunas and so forth, and really have no dynamism. I think that they've recently been joined by somebody who's ex-Microsoft who is going to try and do a better job, and that's why they're tying up with Microsoft. But they're just not cutting the mustard yet.
They've got 41%
this year, you know, when they are a major, major, and a highly, I mean, what a brand. I mean, what a reputable brand. I mean, they're really losing it.
Well, I'm going to jump in there. I was actually having a conversation with my chairman this morning about phones and his stuff, and he said, "Well, what phone's that then?" I said, "It's a phone. It doesn't do email. It doesn't even have Wi-Fi on it. I have one of them." He said, "Well, why haven't you got the iPhone I got you?" I said, "Because I don't need it. I want a phone."
Yeah.
And what I want a phone to do, I'm quite happy with an SMS where you can send a little message to people. Yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah.
As to the rest of it, I'm sorry. I know you're all going to whinge at me now because I'm supposed to be a technology bloke, but I prefer my email to be on my laptop.
Yeah.
You can call me a Luddite if you want, and I don't care, but I like it on there. I can read it easily. I haven't got problems with little squidgy screens and all the rest of it. And no, I don't want an iPad so I can read the bigger screen, because if it hasn't got Wi-Fi connection, I'm screwed, and I can't plug it in easily and blah, 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 blah. And at the end of the day, if I do as I do every morning, I don't do it, the computer does it because it's set up to do it. When I come into the office, all the computers go on. I then turn my attention to a very important job. I go and get a cup of tea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And by the time that's finished, all my emails are downloaded onto a hard drive that if the internet then crashes, I don't have a problem reading through them, even preparing the replies when the internet comes back, because I can do it on a laptop. I can't do that with my mobile.
I think that's a very good point. I think it's time we also return to the years and the decades of the red telephone box.
Right. Do you know what? I'm trying to buy one.
They're easy enough.
I can get you one. I've told you this before. I know the man who sells them.
Well, you helped us get one, Lee, because that's why we've got one at Aqua City.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got one.
Yeah. I know the man.
Yeah, the only thing I had to do when it came in its flat-pack box was cast my mind back to when I was a teenager and trying to remember all the little training courses I had from British Telecom about putting the glass in, et cetera, which I did after a while, and we built it.
Come flat-packed?
It came
a telephone box?
Yes.
It's a flat-packed telephone box. It wasn't actually when it set off, but the lorry ran over it.
No, so it was actually packed up properly. All the glass was in a different pack. Da-da-da-da-da. The wooden background for the phone is separate to it, light bulbs, everything. And you assemble it when it gets on site, and there are special tools. There's a bag of tools, which look a bit odd to anybody who hasn't used them before, to actually locate and secure the little studs that hold the glass in, the surrounds for it, the whole gambit. Even a little tool to attach the leather strap to the door.
And that little tool's called Eric.
Don't start me on the next one. Websites should carry libel risk for anonymous posts. No, they shouldn't.
I'm not sure about this. When I first thought this story was a good story, I swung in exactly the direction that you've swung. Then I swung in the opposite direction. Now I've come back to that. I don't know, really. We've asked about this, like, for so long, haven't we? We've said that websites should be responsible for their content. And does this really make a difference to that situation at all?
Well, no, I think if you, you know, I am, for want of a better term, a webmaster. And I look, because that's the term that's used, I look after a bunch of websites.
Mark's a dummy matrix.
Very good. And I have a responsibility to make sure the content that's on there is informative and correct to the best of my knowledge. We do have a disclaimer on there that says if you click to somebody else's site, we can't vouch for that. And, you know, that goes without saying. But the truth is, if you're going to be the – it's like being an editor of a newspaper, I guess. If you want to run the story and it's complete claptrap, then you are
responsible.
Absolutely. And why should there be any difference to a website? Well, it wasn't me that posted it, actually, Governor. It was somebody else.
Well, I think that is an important difference, actually, because, you know, and I think it's Lee who very often sort of signaled up the, and I, you know, probably quite rightly, the difference between journalism and what was the other one, public or community?
Citizen journalism. I think that where things are produced by professional journalists,
then I think that the public do repose, you know, sort of trust and confidence that somebody's gone and done their job. And they take it in an authoritative way. And I think that, you know, defamatory statements in an ordinary newspaper of authority is going to be far more damaging than something on a website. And I think that's right. I don't know whether the whole idea of libel should be abolished, but certainly I think it should be very clear that the kind of damages that can be expected from a defamatory statement on a website are going to be much, much less than if they are carried in the London Times.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, because if you look at some of the readerships of websites, Mark, you're into hundreds of thousands.
Yes, but I think if you look at the kind of authority that they wield, you know, and particularly when you know that people are posting, you know, their own. In other words, it's not a journalist is researching. So somebody's come along and they've recounted what they consider as their own experience and so forth. But I think that for that to happen, I think people have to understand really what, you know, websites and forums and so forth really are.
Well, I think that there is one good part to this story where the committee responsible for all this and potentially making new laws has said that there should be a new notice and takedown procedure. And what that means, boys and girls, is where you do find some idiot content relating to anybody that's untrue and classified as defamatory to the legal system, there should be a quick remedy for those people. Yeah. And by quick, that also means the little guy. And I'm reminded of the story that we touched on several months ago, where one camera business was slagging off another camera business, both basically sole traders, and trying to put one or the other out of business. Now, to go to the cost of barristers and lawyers and all the rest of it for your typical shop on the high street owned by, you know, Mr. Banks or Mr. Gander, it's not necessarily possible for them to have the budget to go to these sort of high costs of £1,000 an hour for a barrister.
Absolutely not.
So it should be the case that simple untruths should be able to go through a system and get taken off the internet incredibly quickly. And in actual fact, do you know what that would do for the internet? Bring its quality levels up.
It would give it some sort of integrity, which is what it lacks at the moment.
Yeah.
Is there another point in this story, though, that it was only touched on in this story, and I think it is quite important, that there is also part of this thought process says that judges should also be in a position where they could tell somebody that they must keep that post on, no matter what its content is. They can actually force a website to keep a post posted. And that's
wrong.
How many newspapers
I'll tell you what, Lee, I'll put it in English. If you go to court and it says Lee has got black hair when he's clearly got grey hair,
ash blonde,
and you know, the judge can force a publication, a website, to keep that content on his site, and I just do not agree with that.
Can they really?
Well, no, what it is.
That's the proposal.
Excuse me. Excuse me. What it's saying is that if it is considered that something is in the public interest, then a court can force a website, if they want to take it down, can force a website to keep it up,
yeah.
If you forgive the phraseology.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas that would never happen in a newspaper, because a newspaper has total control over its content.
Yeah.
You can only force them to take some things out. So in a way, it is a point, and I take what Eric said, and I'm sorry if I didn't explain it properly, but the fact is that actually that is quite a significant point of a thought process towards legislation.
Mm. Absolutely, and that worries me intensely as well.
Yeah.
Halifax Bank tells a customer to go away in short, jerky movements.
Yeah.
To go forth and multiply. Well,
yes, that one as well.
Yeah, what an awful thing.
Or to ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
A dad received a credit card application form and was horrified after he realised it was addressed to F.K. off.
Yes.
Mm. Well, you would be if you got a letter like that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Dear Mr. Off.
Yeah, the letter from the Halifax began, Dear Off.
Yes. And it was addressed to Mr. F. Off.
Yes.
Do you think the listeners have got it now?
Yeah, probably. And the worst part about it all is it went to a school examinations officer who said, I couldn't believe the bank has no system for picking up such profanity. Well,
you know what? They did. They did have a system for picking it up, and they did pick it up, but it went out anyway.
Well, can I tell you about a naughty thing I tried to do?
Go on.
Because I have to say that there's been many exposés done on the Kennel Club, most of which are absolutely accurate. And I was once in a position whereby my then partner and I did breed high quality to correct home only puppies. Facts of life.
Between you.
That was you and your partner, was it? Yeah,
that's quite a trick, Eric.
And one of the
did you do it, doggy?
And one of the breeds that we worked on, unfortunately, was not a champion. We had Irish Wolfhounds and we had Standard Dachshunds. And
how could you breed those together?
It was quite fun.
Get one on a footstool.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so we just thought this was amusing. And so we entered. I won't say the prefix that's used because the prefix is still used because I know she still shows dogs. But I decided to enter the name Ophelia, and the second name was Balls, and it went through, and she was shown as Ophelia Balls.
It's like the lion tame was called Claude Balls.
And somebody tumbled it a bit later on when they did. That's disrespectful, that. Really? No, it's just a joke. Lighten up. But they didn't see the funny side of it. Anyway, I can understand why Stephen was...
Sorry, go on. I'm just going to say, very quickly, right, just returning to that story. The thing that got me about it is... that bizarrely, the window of the envelope had been broken at the Halifax, and someone had actually tried to block out the F word with a pen and then carried on sending it.
I can't believe it.
Well, maybe it was supposed to, but I mean, I suppose probably this was done by some angry or some Halifax employee who decided, I can imagine these kind of things happen all the time. I'm sure that I saw a news article like this a year or so ago, maybe which came from the telephone company or something like that, where the same thing happened. I'm sure there's all sorts of
absolutely
bit of interference, you know.
A man has been jailed in Enniskillen, and I think he's been kissing the Blarney Stone after trying to turn feces into gold. Paul Moran will now serve 3 months in jail and a further 12 months on license after the failed experiment caused a fire at his housing executive home in Derwent Park, Enniskillen. Lovely part of the world, as it goes. Moran was, he admitted arson endangering the lives of others in the fire, which reportedly cost over...
Do you get it? Admitted arson.
Ha, 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 ha. But where the heck was he coming from?
Well, it's apparently a part of a bizarre experiment. He left his feces on a heater.
Right.
Well, you know, I don't know. Are you going around his place for tea tonight? Are you?
No. I think I'll pass on that one.
Imagine. Pass, yes.
I think he's definitely kissed the Blarney Stone. That's all I can say.
It's an ultimate dream, isn't it? I tell you, there's no difference in that hotel charging $500 for a sausage, though, is there?
No.
I second the motion.
I second that motion. Ha, ha, ha.
It's a very moving story.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. A man has finished his 100th marathon. Is that right?
No, not 100. No. He was 100 and he finished the marathon.
And 100 finishes marathon.
But he started when he was 70, and so it's taken him 30 years. I'm sorry, that's not the story.
Oh, my word. So a 100-year-old Brit has become the world's oldest marathon runner after finishing a race in Canada.
Yes.
That's right. And I have to say that he's one of my Indian compatriots as well, Fauju Singh. He lives in Ilford in East London,
and near the Taj Mahal restaurant.
That's right. And he ran the Toronto Waterfront Marathon, and it only, despite what that naughty Mark said, took him 8 hours, 25 minutes, and 16 seconds. And I tell you what, were you talking about your health predicaments, Mr. Eric? Look at this bloke, 100, ran. He said he hit the wall at 22 miles into the thing.
Yeah, well, his training regime's obviously flawed, really, you know. I mean, he should have been better prepared.
Yes.
Fine, did he? Didn't see the wall coming.
He's only been rehearsing for 100 years, goodness sake. What's this hacking thing, then, Lee?
What hacking thing?
Hacking? Yes.
No.
Well, you put it on here.
I haven't... sorry, I see what you... No, that's quite a serious thing, isn't it, actually? Yeah, sorry, I misunderstood what you're saying. Yeah, I think it's just something that I would like to point out to you and Mark, because I do think it's quite important.
Would you like to summarise it for us, to bring us all
up to speed? Well, we've got a minute and a half, guys.
Basically, the Surrey Police have admitted that in 2002 they were quite well aware that a person working for the News of the World was actually hacking Millie Dowler's telephone. And they did nothing about it and said nothing about it. Because actually, in fact, they don't say this. They don't actually say that they thought it was perfectly acceptable. They say that they were more interested in finding Millie Dowler. Now, so was the person who was working for the News of the World. That's all he was trying to do. And he was working in the same way as the police were to do this. And I just think it's absolutely shameful now that all this time down the road, after all the scandal that's been caused about closing down a national newspaper, after journalists have been sat left, right and centre, that the police actually admit that they condoned this hacking in 2002.
Oh, I'm not saying they... No, that's wrongly. They didn't condone it. Right. They didn't.
What they said is that no action's been taken. What's going to be very interesting now is to see why no action was taken.
Exactly. It's
that
going to be No, it's not condoning it, and I'm not going to have that one. But it's interesting as much.
Hang on, let me say on this point, right? That the police, this journalist, he wasn't a journalist, but this private eye, didn't just phone up Surrey Police and have a chat with them and let it be known
by
accident.
I know this is slightly frivolous and we have got to run into it, but if somebody does something and the police just give you a warning rather than a ticket, that's not saying that they're condoning what you're doing, it's just giving you a warning and letting you get on with it and go home and get it fixed.
I mean, I understand that they're investigating why this happened.
That isn't what happened. No, this bloke was talking to the police generally, doing his job and being quite honest about it and what he was actually doing. The police knew exactly what he was doing, and they knew that he was working towards finding Millie Dowler.
I think we'll have to leave it there, Lee, because we're right out of time. Right. That's Postcard from Pop Radio. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye-bye, everybody.
The Station of the Stars. RTI.